Okay, so our first question is just to introduce yourselves and give these guys a little background on you in case they don't know you as a mentor mom. Mary, the mic is behind you for you guys. So if you want to just grab that one and make sure it's on.
Okay, do you want me to start?
Yeah, is it on?
It's on, I think. Okay, I'm Mary Ellison. I'm married to Mark. We have four children, a boy 29 and girls 27, 23, and 19. What else did you want? Is that enough? I actually, if you know me well, I might look funny. I actually had oral surgery on Tuesday, and this side of my face is swollen. So, but I can still talk. I like to talk, so... The one thing I would say is this kind of thing can be encouraging and it also can be discouraging if you're comparing yourself to everybody else's good ideas. So I just really pray that you won't go away discouraged, but we'll just let the things go that don't fit your life or your personality and maybe take one or two things that do.
I'm Rachel Graham. I'm married to my husband, Blake. We have four kids. We have a 19-year-old and almost 18-year-old. They're both in college. Well, my 19-year-old's a boy. My 18-year-old is a girl that we adopted from Ethiopia when she was eight. And then we have a almost, so I have two birthdays next weekend. So, okay. So he's going to be 17, and then my youngest is going to be 14.
I'm Joy, and I have twin daughters, and they are 26 years old. Sweet and simple.
I'm the end of the line. You're going to need it too, though. No, you've got your.
Okay. I'm the end of the line. I'm Joyce. I've been married 44 years, and it just gets better. My husband says if you can see the bottom of your love level is just too shallow. Keep going. It just gets better and better and better. I have four children, 29 to 39, and being a mother has been the most awesome thing I've ever done. I worked as a nurse for 8 years, and then I quit to be a mom. I learned so much from my children. And when I was reading the questions, I want to tell you, I read the questions in the car as we were traveling back last night, and there were actually some tears in the car because there's so much heart in these questions, and some of these questions deserve so much more than you're going to get today. I'm just absolutely sure of that. We're going to touch on high points, and there's just so much, you know, but I want you to know that in Scripture says that one of the things that is honorable is raising children, so don't ever lose sight of that. And like I echo Mary, just, you know, some of the things that we do are particular to us. They won't fit you exactly. So like Mary said, take what fits you, run with it, and what doesn't, say, thanks, but not for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can keep it.
Okay.
Yeah. And Joyce, you can keep the mic because this one's for you. Okay. We're going to start with kind of a fun question. What is a home remedy that everyone should know?
Yay. Okay. So I will tell you, we spent 2 years in France when my children were little, and I would see mothers on the playground. Their kids would fall, and they would run to their backpacks and get these little pellets and put them underneath their tongues, and I thought, what are they doing? Okay. And so after a while, I started finding out that they were putting arnica pellets under their kids' tongues, and I thought, okay, well, that's really interesting. And then I found out you can get arnica as a gel or a pellet, and it's a homeopathic medicine. You can get it probably at any Whole Foods store, and it works amazingly well for when your children fall down and you think they're going to develop a bruise. Give them some arnica gel, and that bruise will not develop. It's just an amazing thing. I mean, my daughter has three kids. She carries it in her diaper bag, okay? Or they're not diaper bag anymore, backpack, whatever. So the arnica gel, amazing thing that I learned. The other thing is lavender oil for minor burns. And these two things are small to carry around. You know, it's not like taking a big first aid kit. And so it's easy to take around. And minor burns, lavender essential oil, arnica gel, bumps and bruises. So.
Thank you, Joyce.
Yeah.
Didn't know about either one of those. All right. So Do you have any beloved family traditions that your children still do or talk about?
Well, I have some, but can I keep it?
It's you, Joyce, and Rachel, I think, also
okay.
had this one.
I do. I the first one, I actually brought it, you know, I just love this. This happened as a family tradition by accident. We had this lovely little baby girl, and we were so proud of this little baby girl. So one Christmas, we took a snapshot of this little baby girl, and we put it in our Christmas card, and then the next year we thought, well, that was kind of fun. And so we have these little books, okay? This is the Draymond Family Christmas, okay? And it is every year of Christmas that they were growing up until they left home to be married or go off to college, and these went with them as they left, okay? These are treasured things in my children's home. They love them. It tells a story more than just a Christmas picture. It's like, I remember those dresses. Ah, look at that one, you know. Well, that's where we were living then, and there's just so much history and fun in these things. And so the first one, each child, they have theirs when they were introduced into the family, and that's when their picture book begins. And then they have a record of all the other ones. So this was very special to all of my kids, and they love that. What are some other ones? Some of them are really simple. Deciding their birthday menu, tradition that they absolutely loved. And my kids, they went from macaroni and hot dogs to gratin dauphinois and mousse au chocolat. And after a while, it was like, okay, we got to stop this, you know. Another one was mystery meals. And this is something that we didn't do every periodic thing. And you might say, what is a mystery meal? So my mother-in-law started this, and it has been an amazing fun in my family. So the children would submit to me a request via paper or orally. What do you want for dinner? You can't tell anybody, okay? I was the only one that got to know. So we would have five entrees or five desserts or five salads or whatever. It didn't matter. You had to wait till dinner, and there was so much excitement and expectation what was going to be on the table that evening. They loved it, okay? Reading on car trips and at home, lots and lots of fun, really great traditions. Working hard. My children had to work hard. We have several acres. They had to work hard, and then it was a special treat to have pizza and watch a movie as a family. The TV wasn't on often at our home, so that was a really special thing that we did. Two-year-old portraits. Again, it just kind of happened by accident, but every child has a two-year-old portrait in our hallway, and it's fun to see them say, you know, come look at my picture. You know, look at that. Aren't I cute? Okay, so that was fun. Christmas concerts. We have four children, and all of them are musicians. Two of them are professional musicians now, but we did Christmas concert. We started out in our home inviting neighbors and friends, and then we actually got big enough that we started having them in the church. We would go to nursing homes, and that was a tradition. So if your children can play the piano or have a poem or something like that, fun traditions to have them share whatever they can do with other people. Eating together when daddy gets home. You may think this sounds simple, but it's really hard sometimes, and it's really a wonderful thing. I know my daughter-in-law said her family, her mother would prepare dinner, and they would all eat whenever they felt like it, and then they'd get home from their activities. Okay, you know, there are different ways of doing things. Especially my children, I would get tired sometimes of waiting for daddy, and they'd say, oh, no, we can't eat without dad. And it's like, I can. But they really wanted to wait. And interestingly enough, I did find a little ditto from a write-up. It says, and this is a quote, thanks to 2 decades worth of research, Harvard Graduate School explains that simply taking a few minutes each day to turn off screens and genuinely connect with each other over food can improve the physical and mental health of all members involved. It's worth it. It's worth it. So those are some of our traditions.
And Mary?
What was it? Rachel.
Well, one of ours kind of happened by accident, too. We went, it was when my two boys were little, and we went, we were going to Bethany, and it was Christmas Eve service, and we were like, oh, well, we'll eat after service, because it must have been like at 5 or, I don't know, something that was kind of a hard time to know if we should eat before or after. And anyway, and so this is when Bethany was on Knoxville, and we started driving around, and a lot of stuff was closed by this time. It was, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 at night. And so anyway, Olive Garden happened to be open. So we went there, and then that just ended up to be our tradition on Christmas Eve. And then sometimes there's, you know, times when maybe we have family stuff or whatever on Christmas Eve. So, but we always, like, we try Christmas Eve, but if that doesn't work, like, right before Christmas, we always go out for a dinner at Olive Garden. And my kids were devastated in 2020 when the restaurants were closed. And but we ended up, there was a restaurant that was Pizza 150 in Kickapoo was open, so we went there. But it just kind of, you know, everyone was very sad. And then the other thing we do is we started when they were little is we take that child out for their birthday, like just my husband and I and then that child. And it started, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, which was great. And now it's like Johnny's Steakhouse and like these expensive places. And we have two birthdays next weekend, so it will be an expensive weekend because they're all very, like, I don't know. They just, like, their tastes have changed. But that is just really nice for all. I mean, just to have that one-on-one time with those kids. So.
Those are great. Thank you. The next question is for Joy and Mary. Have you had seasons of struggling to respect or cherish your husband? What did you do or wish you had done to make improvements in this area?
Yeah, I think this is probably a common thing because none of us has the perfect husband. And so, I think there's always times when you might have a hard time really appreciating who your husband is. And I think one thing for me was often the problem wasn't with my husband, or at least most of the problem wasn't with my husband, but it was with myself and my own heart. And so, and especially if we'd had a disagreement. So I would often just need to go and like clean the bathroom very vigorously while I prayed about, you know, what was in my own heart and thinking through, you know, my own side of things and whether it was reasonable or not, and just asking the Lord to help me see and repent of my end of it first before we, you know, came back together to talk about it again. I think another thing is don't compare because those other guys aren't as great as they seem. You know, so you see somebody else's husband, it's like, man, I wish my husband would be, you know, like that. But that guy might be great at that thing that your husband isn't as great at, but he has his things that your husband's really better at than he is. So comparison never helps. And then another thing is comparison. Like there was a time, a period of time where I had several good friends who went through major marriage problems, and some men that seemed really solid suddenly weren't. And so there was like a whole hidden life. And that really, my appreciation for my husband went way up. You know, just a solid guy who is honest and kind and gentle. And that really settled in. So don't compare, but then, you know, there are opportunities where you can see that your husband really is good. And then building on that, the foundation of your relationship, you know, marriage takes work, and so building on that, not allowing yourself to dwell on, you know, you have your own, I have my own issues too, so if I only dwell on his, then that's not a good thing. And also, I heard a speaker talk once about, as a mom, that you are the example to your children of how a wife should treat their husband. And that really hit home. You know, what kind of example am I giving for my daughters as to how they should be interacting and treating their husbands? So.
So I agree that this must be a common problem, because I remember a time in our lives where we were just disagreeing on how to parent media, and I was really discouraged, and I went to a mother's conference, and there was a speech, a topic you could pick called "Your Husband is Not the Enemy." And so I thought, okay, I'm not the only one who struggles with it, but it really helped me. I did go to that I did go to that session, but also just that title has stuck with me because I think it's easy to get the idea that you're opposing each other, and I think God really wants us to be unified even when we don't agree, that we're on the same team. We're both trying to raise these children to be God-honoring people, and we have different backgrounds and different strengths and weaknesses, but we're on the same team. So that was helpful to me. Another thing that God used in my life, sometimes it's easier to love your children because they're biologically yours, where you've picked your husband and he's not. And and you don't expect them to be as perfect. You think you married this perfect guy and then you find out he's not. And you don't expect your children to be perfect. And one of the things that God used to help me was to thinking about what kind of wife I hoped my son would get someday. And I thought, oh, my mother-in-law hoped that her son would get a really good wife someday. And it just really helped me then to think, oh, I could probably be kinder. Lord, help me to be kinder. Lord, help me to be more forgiving, not quite so expecting of perfection or letting him be tired. And so that was helpful. And then the other thing that really more just lately has hit me, it's somehow so easy for me to see things, to pray for my kids and to really pray for their spiritual growth and that hard things would be used for good in their lives. And it's made me realize I missed years of realizing that God could use me knowing my husband, knowing where he's struggling, to lift up those areas in prayer and ask God to help him grow, or just to pray through the fruit of the Spirit that he would be kind and loving and patient and all of those things, instead of just seeing him as this strong person that doesn't need prayer. And so that's just an encouragement to pray for your husband in the areas that you struggle and ask God to help you be patient, but also to change your husband and to help him become more like Christ.
That's really, really good. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh, I love the praying through the fruit of the Spirit, if I may say so. That's good. I lost it. There it is. Okay, this one's for Rachel. I've struggled with postpartum anxiety, and I often blame myself saying, oh, it's just the first time mom craze, and feel guilty for struggling. People respond with, it'll be different with the second. When I've sought modern medicine and counseling, I'm still stuck in this guilt trap. Does it actually get better with the second? Or how can I saturate my mind with God's truth on a daily basis to combat negative self-talk?
Okay, I didn't struggle necessarily with postpartum. I actually struggled with post-adoption depression syndrome, which I didn't realize was a real thing, but it really is. But with my first baby, I did struggle more with baby blues. And, you know, that just, I think, because transition is hard for me. And so, like, the huge transition from, you know, going from working part-time to having this little one to take care of and the responsibility, I remember just the weight of that. Like, I remember thinking, I can never do anything without, like, thinking about this child, like, getting a babysitter or taking him with me or whatever. And, like, for some reason, and then watching my husband walk out the door to work every day the way he always did was very hard for me. And so, I don't know, that was just hard. So, like, that whole transition is, you don't necessarily have that with a second, but it's still a huge life change. And I would never say it's going to get better because it might not. And, but like I, with my daughter, when I brought her home, I was very much into, I was very down and I had lots of anxiety. I ended up going on medicine. My world had changed and I just thought, what did I do to my family? But through just, I did get on medicine and through the help of my family and prayers, you know, I crawled out of it, but I still have, I still have times of anxiety and, just really, you know, where I'm just full dependence on the Lord. And so I guess for, I mean, the simple things like just making myself go on a walk. I remember one time I was actually it was recently, a few weeks ago, and I was just really struggling. And my husband, it was a Saturday, and my husband's like, "Let's go on a walk." And I was like, I can't even do that." But I did, and I just felt better. And obviously, you know, and everyone says pray and read the Bible, and that works. And then a lot of times I'll go to the concordance and look up anxiety and just read those verses. And sometimes it might just be one verse over and over and over and just keep it in your head. If you don't have the capability of reading a whole chapter or, you know, just one verse. But I remember after my daughter came home, one time getting out of bed, I remember looking down at the floor and looking at my feet, and I just remember, "Lord, help me to take the next step," because I couldn't think about even going downstairs. Like, and then, okay, I can do it. That, "Lord, help me take the next step." So sometimes it's not even praying for your whole day. It's praying for your next step. And just with the help of, you know, my husband, that's, you know, when I look back, I mean, he stepped up huge for me. And I remember, like, he called my mom crying one time, like, "I don't know what to do." So she came for a week, and then that's when I started on my doctor goes to our church, and she saw me one Sunday, and she was like, "I can get you some medicine." And so she was everything was just kind of a God thing in that, and just to get me out of that. But I still struggle, and, you know, sometimes it's like, why can't I just get rid of this? I just don't, you know, and it's not necessarily every day, but, you know, it's still there every once in a while. It comes back, and, you know, and you just have to, it's just maybe something God gave me to realize I have to depend on him. I can't depend on anybody else. And just depend on, like, you know, this morning just, and sometimes you, like, it's hard to maybe just find time, especially when you have little ones that are pulling on you and whatever, to read the Bible. But, like, on my way to church today, I listened to the Bible. I have the Bible app on my phone, and I just listened to the Bible. And that just, I noticed, I was like, "Oh, that's just so calming." I just listened to Psalms. And sometimes it's just, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're reading things in the Bible, it's hard. But, like, I had someone tell me when I was going through that, is sometimes just the Psalms, just that is just comforting. So I would love to talk to anyone who's struggling with that, and I can't necessarily say it'll be over in 1 year or it'll be over someday, because this is discouraging because it might not. You just have to rely on the Lord, and I would love to talk to anyone who is struggling with that if you would like to reach out to me. So.
Can I add something to that?
Yes, and I would like to add something as well. I also struggled and still struggle a lot with postpartum anxiety, and I am far willing to talk about any detail of it. So I am also one of those people you can come to if you need it, and I have a lot of resources in my mind and my spot, so I'm offering that as well.
Go ahead, Joyce.
Just Mary touched on one thing, and then Rachel touched on another thing for me, and, you know, remembering that your husband is not your adversary and that he really is out there to help you and to be your friend and your advocate. And then when Rachel said, you know, here they go walking out the door, and I share this just as kind of, it was really difficult at the time and pricked my little feisty feathers, but I was just absolutely overwhelmed with the children, and I'm just like, look at this, I can't do this, and blah, 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 blah. And he looked at me and he said, "Have the children help you." I looked at him, and we still laugh about this to this day, and my grown children laugh about it too. I said, "I want you to take the children to work and have them help you." I share that in that I feel your pain. We still laugh about it. My husband laughs about it too, and he says, "You know, I meant to help," and it's like, now I understand that. But at the time, it was like, "You've got to be kidding me." Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you both. That was fantastic. The next question is for Mary. I know it's hard for kids to pray, but how hard ought I try to keep a small child from being too wiggly or just mumbling through the same prayer every night?
Sorry, I don't think well on my feet, so I made notes. Okay, so
The question, I'm going to repeat it. I know it's hard for kids to pray, but how hard ought I try to keep a small child from being too wiggly or just mumbling through the same prayer every night?
So I'm going to broaden the question a little bit to just talk about praying with your children, teaching your children to pray. So personally, I wouldn't worry about the wiggly unless it's just driving you crazy. But I know God said to let the little children come to me. And so he loves your kids, and he knows they're wiggly. He made them. And so I don't think it's going to bother him if they wiggle while they pray. You may not be able to stand it, but I actually talked to one of my adult children while I was thinking through this question, and she actually said that one thing that's was very difficult for her, because prayer was so personal, was to do any praying out loud in front of an adult. And I think it's sometimes we just model things. Okay, another idea is that saying the same prayer every night. I would brainstorm prayer topics yourself that maybe you're praying, the child is there and you're saying the words, but you're praying together. So maybe you go through a season where you pick a family member, a different family member each night, and pray for God to bless that family member's life. Or you go through a season where you're thanking God for something that he made in his world that you like, that you enjoy. Or maybe it's, you can kind of tell sometimes if a child is struggling, so asking them, is there something wrong in your life that's bothering you that we can pray about? But again, I think you saying the prayer with them there, even if they're wiggly or they don't seem like they're paying attention, I think that God can use that to teach them to pray. And then also just maybe the wiggly child and you go on a prayer walk and you thank God for all the things that you see while you're walking. Think about times like that 100th time that you're out the door 5 minutes too late with the kids and you're in the car and trying to just ask God in front of them to help you figure out how to manage all of this better so that you can get out the door on time, or just as things come up in your life, just praying in front of them to kind of give them the idea that this is a conversation we have with God. He loves us. He cares about our lives. We can ask him the smallest little things and the biggest things, and he cares about both. So that's my encouragement to you. Just love on him and share life with him.
Thank you for that. Okay, the next one is for Joy. What are some tips for training my child or children to be healthy and adventurous eaters?
Sounds like you have a hard one. The giggles are starting already.
Yeah, right. They signed up for these, I want you to know. We're not just asking them willy-nilly.
Well, my first thought was, simply offer them healthy and adventurous foods. Because that is part of the equation, right? Is what you offer. I was a very, very picky eater as a child. I have vivid memories of having to sit at the table long after everyone else was done with my plate of food in front of me that was stone cold, and I didn't want it when it was hot. I really don't want it when it's cold. And I did, once I had my own kids, I was like, I'm not going to do that. But there were a few simple rules that we had, just kind of table rules. And my husband was a good, really encouraging enforcer for these things. And one was, if you don't want something, just say no thank you. Instead of, ew, that's yucky, so the kids were never allowed to just declare something yucky. They had to at least respect the cook a little bit and just say no thank you if you do not want more. Also, we did, any time that we had something they'd never seen before, they had to try a little bit, and they were not allowed to declare it yucky before they had tasted it. So some, the tricolor rotini noodles, and it's like, oh, the green ones were always separated out, like those were declared yucky. They all taste the same. So anyway, they had to at least try it and just put a little bit on their plate to just try it. If they didn't like it, that's fine. You don't have to like it. So I guess that's another thing is if you don't like something, just move on. I didn't try to force them to eat anything that, because everybody has different tastes. We're all, as adults, we all have different tastes too. So that wasn't, in that sense, it wasn't a battle. So sometimes food can, and children realize that you really want them to eat. So then it kind of becomes a more of a struggle of the will. Just encouraging small portions to, like, even things they do like, just put a little bit so that they, just establishing a habit of, I can have a second helping if I want more of something, but not, not let them pile a bunch of one thing on their plate. And I also didn't offer a lot of snacks between meals because, again, if they don't like, if they have a hard time appreciating dinner, but then you're giving them, goldfish for 3 hours before dinner, then they're not going to be hungry for anything. So it really does help to have, have an appetite. I remember going up to my mom as she's making dinner saying, I'm hungry. And, it's just, it's just a little bit till we have dinner. So, and then, toddlers, especially age 2, 3, they can be especially, they're just notorious for having a limited diet. And so, and not eating a lot at once. So one thing is to, I tried to make every bite count so that it wasn't a lot of empty calories, but, if it's a slice of apple or a strawberry, they're at least getting some nutrition out of the, 10 bites in the day that they eat. So I think, another rule we had was to eat your growing food first, So, yes, you can have these other things that are a sweet or whatever, but to encourage them to eat the fruits and veggies and good stuff first. So I think your own attitude towards food is good to model trying new things, being excited about trying new things. Sometimes if you can tolerate having your children help you in the kitchen, then let them be a small part of that. Or in the grocery store, as you're picking out things like, oh, look at this, wonder what this is, and have them try something maybe you've never even tried before. There's lots of stuff in the grocery now that I don't know what it is, but
dragon fruit and star fruit.
Let's try it. Let's see what it's like. So, yep.
Okay, thank you. Those are great tips. The next one is for Mary. What do you do, other than pray, obviously, when you're trying to read your Bible, you're so tired you could cry, someone's boogers are stuck in your hair, your reading comprehension is zero, like when you read a sentence and have no idea what it said?
So for me, the first 3.5 years of mothering were exhausting. I think I was exhausted from the time Ken was born till Rachel was 1.5 years and he was 3.5. So welcome. I had really wanted children. I had children later in life than some. I may be misreading this question, but what it spoke to me was that I did not think it was important to give myself a sleep and rest. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. So if you ask this question and that's not the answer that works for you, just ignore me. But when I was in a Bible study in college and I was tired, I remember mentioning how tired I was, and the leader unsympathetically said, the world is run by tired people. And I gave him too much credit for understanding life and the world. And so for the next 20 years,
I think I felt like I was just supposed to be tired, and that I was a weak person if I would try to prioritize getting more sleep. And I finally, when I was pregnant with my third child, thought I cannot be that tired again, and began to look for ways that I could get more sleep into my life. It's not always possible, I know. So if you feel like you're just up against it and you just can't, don't beat yourself up over that. But for me, there was an element of, oh, strong people don't sleep that much. They just power through. And I was shocked to find a verse in the Bible that says that God grants sleep to those he loves. And so anyway, I think you probably ought to figure out how much sleep you need. Some people need more sleep than other people, and I need a lot of sleep. It seems like a weakness, but it's one that God has given me. So I remember a season with this third child where she would wake up to eat in the morning, and I could get her to go right back to sleep, and the older two, I could kind of hear them getting their own breakfast. And I went back to sleep and didn't maybe get up till 10, which I realize some of you are on the opposite schedule, so then maybe you go to sleep, make yourself go to bed earlier. I know a friend of mine said, I'm going to bed because I want to be nice. so I'm not saying it's simple. I don't want you to think that. But maybe sometime you get a family member to watch your kids just so you can get a nap. I went through another season where I was working with just my oldest. I worked mornings. I came home every day. I thought, okay, I'm going to give him a nap, but then I need to get something done around here. And day after day after day, I would just waste that time. And I didn't even see it at the time. Every day I thought, today's going to be different. Today I'm going to get the laundry going, wash the dishes, and I would just sit and waste time doing these little puzzles, kind of like crossword puzzles. And I was so tired, I couldn't even tell myself, you're not doing it. So anyway, that's the direction I took with this question. And just, you have permission to sleep more if you can find a spot in your schedule to work it in.
That's very good. And I'm just going to add, there's also something to be said for faithfulness. So if you are getting enough sleep and you still can't comprehend, there's something to be said for faithfulness and just continuing your Bible reading, because you might be getting more than you think. That's been true for me. So if I may jump in there, even though I'm not a mentor. But sleep is very important to it, too. So it's probably a good place to start, Mary. okay, this one's for Joyce. What do you know about parenting now that you wish you did then? Then being, I guess, the littles phase, you know.
Actually, for me, it would be the all phase. For all of children. I wrote it down because I wanted to make the words come out right, that required discipline, because all of our children require discipline, whether they're littles or biggers or any age. So that required discipline should have always been done because sin breaks God's heart, and not because it made me look bad or made my day difficult. So I wish I had focused more on heart issues along with the learning obedience, because they're both important.
That is convicting. Wow.
Thank you.
The next question is for Joy. Was your relationship with God changed negatively after marriage and then children? What are some tips for growing in your intimacy with the Lord while trying to please your family?
Yeah, I thought this was a really interesting question, the phrasing of it. But I thought about how marriage and children, so the question is, how was your relationship with God changed negatively after marriage and then children? And I think implied in that is you have less time for your own discretionary time that you can use to spend time with the Lord. And so I really think that marriage and children reveal more of what's in your heart. So your self-centeredness can no longer be hidden. We all struggle with that, I think. And, you know, when you're suddenly, you know, living with this person who didn't even grow up in the same type of household you did, there can be lots of tension points. And so that comes to the forefront. And then you have children on top of it. And children are very demanding. They have these needs constantly. And so that also, you know, reveals even more. You think, oh, now, you know, we've got a year or two of marriage behind us. I'm cured of my selfishness. And then children come along. And you realize, oh, there's just more to this pit here. So it might seem like your spiritual life is struggling, and actually it is, you know, like there's, because you're seeing more and more of what's in your heart. And so, you know, what is the solution then? Because it does seem like you have then, in addition to being more aware of the struggles of your own heart, you have less time to just, you know, sit with a cup of coffee for 3 hours in the Word. And so so I think this kind of delves into a different question that we might get to, so I won't go too much into this, but making that a priority, making your time with the Lord, even if it's very brief, like you were talking about, you know, just listening as you're driving somewhere, just listening, or, you know, first thing in the morning, just having, you know, a little, you know, if you're heading through a book, just the next paragraph of the scripture. And you know, obviously praying and talking to the Lord about whatever it is that's being revealed. But I also thought in the end of the question is, what are some tips for growing in your intimacy with the Lord while trying to please your family? So I think that it's a little bit, I'm going to press into that a little bit, because there doesn't need to be a dichotomy between pleasing your family and pleasing the Lord. And really, your highest goal and priority is pleasing the Lord. And through pleasing the Lord, it is pleasing to Him to love and serve your family. And so if you're working for the Lord and not for these people, then it's an act of worship, and it can be at times a sacrificial act to place your family's needs above your needs. And that doesn't mean that you're neglecting the Lord. It means that you're fulfilling the role that He has for you in this season of your life. And there's lots of scripture. I don't want to have a whole sermon here, but Colossians 3:23 and 24, which is actually talking to slaves, interestingly enough. Colossians 3:23 and 24 says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, working as for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." And then we see again in Titus 2, it's talking about, you know, older women, younger women, older men, younger men. For younger women, it says, you know, that younger women are to love their husbands and children and be self-controlled and pure and busy at home and kind and subject to their husbands. And that this actually, it goes on to say, you know, this is actually how we display to the world who Christ is and our what it means to follow Him. So there's, you know, different seasons of life, and you may need to get up, you know, before the day starts. If you have one of those households where it's just, you know, as soon as the little feet hit the floor, it's 100 miles an hour for the rest of the day, then you might need to try to get up a little bit before the little feet hit the floor. Or find your sweet spot. Like, I'm not a morning person, and so that never worked for me, getting up earlier than my family. I mean, super earlier than them. I mean, I try to be a little bit earlier than them. But finding that time of day that you're most likely to have a few minutes, whether that's your kids' nap time or even at the end of the day after they're in bed. So just finding that spot where you're not too tired, you still have some energy, and then also abiding in Christ throughout your day, having him at the forefront of your mind, praying as you go along with tasks. It might be, you know, as you're washing dishes, you're thanking the Lord for the provision he has for your family, that you had food on those plates that you're washing now, and praying for each family member as you fold their clothes, or, you know, just incorporating that into your day. And I think there's always going to be distractions and just life that gets in the way. So, you know, this is a particularly busy season of your life when you have small children. For me, it was the busiest season because it's so hands-on and it's so continual. But even now, there's distractions and things that in life where I can get distracted from setting aside time to meet with God. I know we had a women's event once where someone gave an illustration of a jar, and they had a cup of rice and like three big walnuts, and they poured all the rice into the jar and then tried to fit the walnuts in, and they don't fit because the rice is filling it up. But if they emptied out the rice and put the walnuts in, and then poured the rice in, and it all fit. It all actually fit in the jar. So the point is that you prioritize the most important things first. So you have to set a priority on that time with the Lord. Put that in first, whatever first means for you. It might not be till the end of the day. But prioritize that, and then let everything else fill in around it.
That's good. All right, one more question, and then we'll have a question. I'm just going to give you guys a heads up of, is there anything we missed that you'd like to say? So we're going to ask this question, and then that will be the final question. So you can look over your notes and see if there's anything that maybe we didn't ask that you would like to mention. So this next one, the last one for specific person, is for Rachel. How do you think parenting has changed over the years?
Well, I'm still in kind of the, you know, teenage parenting, but the biggest thing that I have seen is media, phones, just because, like, my husband is one of eight, and so, like, he's got older siblings that, like, he's towards the younger end, and, like, there's things that, like, I go through with phones and stuff like that, like, one of his older sisters, you know, like, she didn't really necessarily go through because her kids were kind of in high school when, like, phones were coming out or whatever. And even now, like, my older two, well, boys, so Hope was eight, so, but of my three bio kids, my older two really didn't have, I mean, we didn't really have iPads or anything like that when they were born, but then my youngest one, like, that kind of started, and just, you know, like, I see now, like, little kids, like, you go shopping, and, like, they're looking at a phone while their mom is shopping, like, watching a show or something. Like, I didn't have that. I mean, that really wasn't a thing when, like, my kids were little. And so I just feel like that is the thing that has changed, and just, it's just hard. I feel like, you know, going through all the whole phone thing and the media thing, and is it, like, sometimes I feel like we're the, like, my generation is the first one to go through that with, you know, middle school and high schoolers, and then it keeps changing and keeps getting worse. I mean, my advice for that is to keep it away from your kids as long as you can, but then it is hard because, I mean, I came to a point, like, with my daughter with social media, like, all her friends in church had it, and, like, she was feeling left out, so it's like, okay, you know, then I ended up letting her have it because it's just so difficult, and it's the thing that I struggle with the most right now with my kids. So, like, when they're little, I would just protect them as long as you can, because it just, it's hard, and I have no answers besides, we're doing what we can, and that's probably our biggest struggle as teens with my teenagers, but just that's like the biggest thing I've seen in parents, and it's just getting, there's just things now that my kids didn't even have when, 12, 13 years ago that we didn't have, and just things that they can get into, and just, that's the thing where I have seen Satan be so crafty and deceitful, it just makes me sick. So it just to keep them away from that as long as you can, because it just, it's very hard. So I don't know if that was.
That answers it. All right, so what is there anything, and you don't have to answer, but as you've looked over your notes, is there anything that you would like to say in closing that you feel like was kind of missed or is important to say before we close to discussion groups?
Okay, I have a couple quick things, because I really liked the question that was about what do your kids remember? So what are the things that they, looking back, that they appreciated or are thankful for? And it was really, so I talked to both my girls, and it was really interesting because it wasn't the things that you might think it is. Both of them said, you read to us a lot and took us to the library. Like, that's such a simple thing. It's not like, I had this big strategy of I'm going to take my children to the library. We just went, it was something to do, and it was free and all of that. So, and we all love reading and books, so they really appreciated that. And then another said, you let us make a mess with Play-Doh. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I remember it being very contained mess. They were only allowed to have it, kind of supervised and in the kitchen so it wouldn't be in any carpet or whatever. But, to them it was a big deal to be able to just play with Play-Doh and make the mess. And another one talked about how they had a playroom that was, it was kind of like their room was big. It was almost like two rooms in one. So one section was kind of sleeping and the other was playing. And they would just, go to town with, my husband would call it, he'd walk by and he's like, there's a Barbie explosion in there. Because it'd just be, Barbie stuff everywhere, or whatever it was, Littlest Pet Shops at the time and stuff like that. And they both talk about how they appreciated that I didn't make them clean that up every day, because it was like a whole fantasy world. And the next morning they could wake up and go right back to where whatever scenario they had been doing the day before and just continue. But occasionally I would, okay, we got to clean all this up. We got to, it's not that hard. Just put it in the bins. It's not like they're, have to line each doll up or anything like that. Yesterday my daughter said it was really nice one time. For some reason that was super overwhelming. I just remember them being, oh, we don't know how. How can we do this? Like, it was so overwhelming to them. And so my daughter said, yeah, and you cleaned it up for us. And she said, that was just really an act of grace. And I was like, oh, I do remember doing that kind of reluctantly. Like, here's how it's done, girls. And I just start winging Barbies into bins, But to her, it was a huge act of grace. Like, she recognized that as that. And at the time, I was just like, we just got to get these things off the floor, So it is just really interesting, the things that they remember and what's going through their minds, at the time that is meaningful to them.
I loved that same question too, and I don't know if you. I have four children. I ask my girls, and because I thought, well, I don't know. They don't really come to me and say, hey, I really appreciate this, Mom. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to ask them. And I have a list straight from the daughter's mouths, but I don't know if you want me to take the time to read it. Okay. So looking back, I very much appreciate the amount of time we were allowed to play. At the time, it didn't seem like very much, but now that I'm a mom and have a different perspective, it was a lot of time. It took a lot of time to get those magnificent dramatic and musical productions put together. Sometimes fun sticks in my mind, spontaneous fun, collecting leaves for dipping in wax, making candles, going blueberry picking. Again, different perspective now because you probably planned these out well in advance, but it felt surprising, new, and intriguing as a child. I appreciated that you worked alongside us for so many years. It was a long time before we were turned loose to do jobs on our own. Reading out loud is a huge part of my childhood, being read to. Also, scripture memory with Awana with clapping and chanting. I'm really quite good at getting kids to memorize things myself at co-op. And, of course, my chickens, her children, okay, because of learning this memorizing aid early on. Freedom to explore interests. I loved, I know, yard working Saturdays where we would get pizza and watch a movie at the end. Working was terrible. Working together was awesome. And the treat was unusual in a great way. I loved reading together as a family. I have very fond memories of having my head slammed back into your chest because I was blocking your view. I loved eating meals together. I loved holidays together and the traditions. I am so thankful that time with you was not used as a reward, nor was it taken away as a punishment. You were a constant. You gave and took things away. I enjoyed playing outside, all of it, the creativity you let us have. I'm glad you gave us things to work on over time where we could fail and succeed at, like our flower gardens. I'm thankful that you didn't make me feel like you didn't want me. You always made me feel special and loved. Maybe sometimes not liked, but always loved. I loved being homeschooled. I know I learned lots of things that other people weren't, like canning, freezing, home care. I will come to an end soon, ladies. Okay. Going to church every Sunday, to the point that I remember wondering if when I was an adult, if I would ever be able to stay home and sleep if I was tired. Allowing us safety in childhood. You always allowed people into your home, but you kept us from harm at others' homes you didn't know or trust. You still had a balance where you let us develop close relationships. All the music lessons, the chores, didn't like them, but learned a lot. I'm thankful for the safety I had. Didn't always understand it, but now look back and see the trauma I didn't have because I was protected. The lessons I was taught as a young age, example, trust is easy to lose, hard to gain. I'm thankful for the incredible commitment you and Dad had to each other that provided me so much emotional security. I'm thankful that you allowed learning to be a byproduct of life, but it wasn't what life was about. You were more interested into helping us turn away from our heathen ways. I'm thankful that you allowed us to fight and make up bizu. Bizu is when you kiss on the left and you kiss on the right, and after you've had a fight with your sibling, it stinks. I'm thankful that you taught us the difference between like and love, and that like is a feeling and love is a choice. I'm thankful that you taught us we were ugly deep down on our own, but beautiful in Jesus. I'm thankful that you taught us that being blood, family, was great, but Jesus' family was better. In other words, covenant is stronger than blood, and that our family was special because we all shared the blood of Jesus. That blessed me. It was a balm to my soul because sometimes you think, does it make a difference? It does, ladies. Keep on going, and it may take a long time, but they'll come back and thank you someday. So keep on keeping on.
Mary, you had that one too. I can't handle too much more though, Mary, so
I'll keep it short. There was a question about what you look back and you miss in the day-to-day, and I think mine is very similar to Joyce, that just the privilege of knowing your own children. And some stages of life just seem like they go on forever and they're boring and you think they'll never change. But even the ordinariness and being able to do it with your own kids and seeing them grow and change and just knowing them so well and knowing where they need prayer is just such a privilege. And then the other thing is that I like things to be the same. And raising children, things don't stay the same. They're constantly changing, and there's always something new that you don't know how to parent, and you didn't think about it ahead of time. And so James 1:5 became my friend, which is if we lack wisdom and ask God for it, he'll give it to us generously. And so I'm just really thankful that we don't do this by ourselves, that Jesus loves us. He likes us. He wants to spend time with us. He wants to encourage us. He wants to do this with us, and we can just kind of have a constant conversation with him for strength and thanking him for the things that go well, and hopefully just, I know for me, just not feeling like I'm totally alone at this, but that he is there and he cares about me. And so, yeah, but James 1:5, asking for wisdom for each new thing was so helpful.
Do you want to, Rachel? Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay. All right, let's give these ladies a round of applause. That's fantastic. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll go to discussion groups. You've got about 23 minutes to sit and talk about whatever you need to talk about and do prayer.